this week's Torah portion is Balak. It is in the book of Numbers, chapter 22, verse 2. And it's a famous story, about blessings and curses, which is a great topic, always, blessings and curses. In fact, this very morning, before I came in here to teach the Torah study, I had a meeting with one of our congregants whose mother died about a month ago during this past month, and who came to talk to me because he was feeling guilty about his lack of grief over his mother's death, and that he didn't feel like he was feeling what he was supposed to be feeling. And so he wanted to talk to me about it and tell me about the nature of his relationship with his mother and the kind of person that she was and how he grew up not being blessed by her but being cursed by her all the time, essentially. This whatever the circumstances of his childhood, actually in his adulthood to the very end, were, and wrestling with the emotional trauma and the spiritual trauma of being in a situation, a typical sort of child situation, where your expectation is for blessings and in fact you keep looking for them but don't find them, and trying to figure out, and in his case, so we started talking about what kind of parent are you, because he has two children, and how did your mother's negative parenting of you affect you as a parent? And he readily admitted that she became his negative role model of exactly what not to do and how not to talk to his own kids, and you know, and that's sort of sitting on his shoulder his whole life as a parent, because he would hear his mother's cursing, really, and way of talking to him, and anger and whatever that she happened to have in her life directed toward him, and therefore do the opposite with his kids. And part of that is pretty much how I experienced the whole issue of blessings and curses anyway, which is that the Torah is filled with them, you know, and it's filled with lessons about blessings and curses. And, you know, and in Deuteronomy we have, you know, what I often quote, the famous line of I set before you this day good and evil, you know, life and death, blessing and curse, and then it ends, choose life. I often point out, as I will this moment, that what it doesn't say is I set before you good or evil, life or death, blessing or curse. It says you get it all, blessing and curse, good and evil. And all of us in our lives know that's the reality of life. You don't. Nobody just has one. Nobody just has all the good in the world, and everything's always coming up roses, and no curses. That is, no evil and no negative things in life. To be a human being, from birth to death, whether rich or poor, no matter what country you live in, no matter what language, no matter what culture, no matter what religion, is to encounter the complexity and messiness and fullness of what life is, which is all of this. It's the good and the bad. And as with this young man I was speaking with earlier today, you don't get to vote on how other people act. You don't get to vote on how other people treat you. What you do get to vote on is what you do with that and how you react to it and what you take out of it and what you learn from it and how you then choose to behave yourself and how you choose to talk and the words that come out of your mouths. And, you know, that's the choices that we have in spite of what goes on in the world around us, and sometimes because of what goes on in the world around us and how we grow up and what our relationships are, siblings, parents, kids, you know, friends, community, all of the messy and complexity of what life is all about. So here we have a story today, which I'm supposed to be talking about, which is, in fact, toward the end of the 40 years of wandering of the Israelite journey in the desert. They've already had a couple of great military victories along the way, with people getting in their way and not wanting to let them pass, and they having to fight for the right to kind of Israel's fate, it seems, to this very day, having to fight for the right to exist and to try to live in peace. And they're successful so far. And now here we have Balak, the son of Zippor, who sees that all that Israel had done, as it says, to the Amorites, that's how this portion begins, which is that they were victorious over them. And Balak is the king, essentially, of Moab, the Moabites. And because he's concerned about the Israelites and their military successes and their military might, he wants to figure out how he can gather whatever support and resources possible to defeat them. And so he goes with an age-old way of doing it. Let me find a famous cursor to curse them. You know, someone who is a prophet, a prophetic kind of voice, a kind of person who knows how to curse. You know, so he hires Bilam. Anyway, so it says, Moab was alarmed because that people was so numerous. Moab dreaded the Israelites. Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this horde will lick clean all that is about us as an ox licks up the gate grass of the field." This sort of powerful expression of fear that we're going to be wiped out ourselves. So Balak, son of Zippor, who was king of Moab at the time, sent messengers to Balaam, son of Beor, in Petor, which is by the Euphrates in the land of his kinsfolk, to invite him, saying, "There's a people that came out of Egypt. It hides the earth from view," meaning there's a lot of them. Right? "And it settled next to me. Come then, put a curse upon this people for me, since they are too numerous for me. Perhaps I can thus defeat them and drive them out of the land, for I know that he who you bless is blessed, and he who you curse is cursed." Now, pop quiz question is, this is an interesting phrase. "I know," says Balak to Bilam, who was not an Israelite priest or Israelite prophet, "that those who you bless are blessed and those who you curse are cursed. Is there any, stir any memories? This phrase is an interesting phrase. Those who you bless are blessed and those who you curse are cursed. You may remember, or you may not, so I won't ask you, that when Abraham first comes up, gets blessed by God,
yes.
That's exactly what Abraham says. God says to Abraham, "Your people will be as numerous as the sands of the sea and the stars of the heavens, and those who bless you will be blessed, and those who curse you will be cursed."
Yes.
So here we are, a long time later, out of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, hundreds of years of Jacob's descendants being slaves in Egypt, and eventually they get out of Egypt, and now they're wandering here, and this little phrase comes back again in relationship to Bilam, who is in the process of being hired by Balak to curse. So actually the first question I always have when I read this section right here is, why, if Balak believes that Bilam has the power to bless or curse, why does he choose curse? Why doesn't he say, "I want to hire you to bless me. I want to hire you to bless my people, so that we will be blessed"?
He didn't have the money to build a wall.
Exactly.
What?
Why? Yes.
Because of good inclination and evil inclination, which is a constant battle within us, it's so much more fun and so much easier to go straight to the negative.
Ah.
And say, let's make them weak instead of making me, I want to make my enemy weak instead of making myself strong. It's a lot easier, less effort.
Interesting. It's like focusing on the enemy, focusing on the other. How can I put down the other rather than how can I make myself better in that sense, or stronger or more successful? Let me see if I can, you know,
denigrate
another.
It's a way of shifting responsibility.
Ah.
If Balak was blessed, then Balak would still have to go and defeat the Israelites.
Exactly.
This way, says, okay, right. Balak, you curse them, then I won't have to do anything.
Exactly.
Kind of.
Right. No, exactly. It's beautiful. He wants to hire a surrogate to take care of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they really believed that the words of someone like this brought things about.
Yes. Yeah, the, look.
Very sincere. Mm-hmm. It seems very sincere, like they
believe that. You know, that's the thing about the ancient world and about the Torah. Let's think about Isaac, our ancestor Isaac, and Jacob and Esau. And the whole famous story of Jacob stealing Esau's blessings. What does that mean? You know, Isaac was there, going in the story, his eyes were dimmed, he couldn't see, he was on his deathbed, well, not exactly, but apparently he was on his deathbed, and he said to his oldest favorite son, Esau, go out and, you know, hunt, bring me some game, and I'll so I can give you blessings, and, you know, Rebecca overhears it and tells Jacob, okay, your dad's going to give blessings, quick. Here, let me make you food. You go in, pretend you're Esau, and get the blessings. And Jacob, you know, reluctantly, but because of fear, he comes in and he does that, and he gives the food. And Isaac says, you know, who are you? And he says, I am Esau, your favorite son. You know, give me your blessings. And so he does, right? So he has a whole bunch of blessings. He gives them all but one. He gives him his blessings. Jacob then leaves. Then Esau comes in and says, here, Dad, here's the food. And he goes, wait a minute, who are you? And he goes, I'm Esau. He said, no, you were just here. He said, no, it wasn't me. You know, and Isaac is bereft and, you know, upset. And, oh, my God, I just gave my blessings away. What does that mean? I gave my blessings away.
Finite.
You know, right? Because in our world, he would just go, oh, that son of a gun, you know, Jacob, come here, Esau. Here's the blessings, you know.
What? I remember as a kid, I was always taught sticks and stones can break your bones, but words will never hurt you.
Right.
Well, it's just words.
Right.
And this gets back to, you're talking about that words themselves have power. After all, how did God create the universe?
Yeah.
In Genesis.
By work. By
God spoke.
By God spoke, and the world came to be.
There's an interesting
prayer. Baruch she'amar v'haya ha'olam, says the prayer. Blessed is the one who spoke, and the world came to be. You know, words in the Torah, in the ancient world, they weren't. There's no such thing as Bert says, mere words. Words had weight. They had substance. It was like, here, I'm giving you my blessing. It's a thing you walk away with,
yes.
You know, or my curses. It's a real thing. It had power. You
but
know.
It's finite, according to the.
Yes.
You only have so many.
Yes, that's right. You could bless. Well, in the ancient world, this whole blessing curse thing is interesting because there clearly were categories of blessings. I can give you the blessing of fecundity. You should have lots of kids, or your crops should grow. You know, it's a blessing of this, or a blessing of health, or a blessing of, you know, and those were the categories of blessings that, and one of them, the only one left actually that Isaac didn't give to Jacob, was the blessing of sort of military strength, in a sense. He gave that to Esau, that kind of power. But there's physical power, there's spiritual power, there's food, there's, you know, and exactly, they were finite things. Here they are, here's my list of them, I give them to you, and now I don't have them anymore, because I gave them away. So, yeah, I mean, that's otherwise the story wouldn't make any sense. But the story makes sense because they believed the curses mattered. You know, I mean, that's what I say all the time. Words matter. And we know words matter. I mean,
there's another parallel here,
yeah,
based on what you brought up about Abraham.
Yeah.
And that is, behind a lot of these stories is who's in charge? Mm. Who has the power? And the Torah says
God.
God that has the power.
God always,
and
yes.
Right. And here, the ultimate, as the story unfolds, that it will be one more proof, as it was at the Sea of Reeds, that God has the ultimate power.
Ultimately.
And not, in this case,
and
Muhammad.
Even, and, you see, there's two messages going on in this story. Two big messages. Message number one is that human beings can plan and God laughs. That human beings can plan and God does whatever God chooses to do. That's one of the messages. But the other underlying message is that you can plot, and you can plan, and you can try to destroy us, but ultimately, God's on our side. So ultimately, the Jewish people / the Israelites, the children of Israel, are blessed by God, protected by God, as long as we do the right thing, as long as we follow God's ways, because that keeps coming up over and over again. If you keep following my ways and doing my commandments and my mitzvot, then everything will be hunky-dory. And if you don't, you'll end up being spread all over the world, which, of course, we were in the end anyway. So, but someday I'll bring you back, and so here we are. But that part of the message is, you can hire whoever you want to try to kill us and wipe us off the face of the earth, but ultimately we're still here. And that's what this story is about. Ultimately, God still is going to direct and make sure that the Israelites continue to be blessed in that sense.
But there's a flip side to that.
Yeah.
And that is that if bad things happen, it's because the Israelites or the Jews did something bad, and that gets into the whole theory of like the Holocaust was punishment or so.
But
I mean, the good side is great.
Yes.
But when you look at the bad side, you look at a child who has cancer. You know, is that punishment to somebody or?
Yeah. Which it clearly isn't. By the way, if you're listening, it's not. Part of the challenge of theology and of any of these texts and searching for the lessons in the texts is trying to be realistic at the same time. That is, not allowing ourselves to have the lessons appear to be absolute, that there's that everything is about reward and punishment, that because in fact it's not in the details it's not, in the broad stroke it is. It's like, why do we have global warming going on, unless you're a Republican? Why we have global warming going on? Sorry, for those who are listening. We have global warming going on because of how we acted. Because we did this, we did that, and we pollute the air, and we pollute the sea, and we pollute this and whatever, and all of a sudden, oops, there's a price to pay. Just like the Torah says, if you follow my rules and you live your lives in accordance with the highest principles of respect for the environment, for the world, which is, after all, one of the very first mitzvot that we have as human beings in the Garden of Eden, is God says, here's the world. Your job, Adam and Eve, is human beings, is to take care of it, to tend it. It's your garden, because if you don't, and the Midrash says from Genesis Rabbah a couple thousand years ago, if you don't take care of it, no one's going to come after you to fix it. If you screw it up, which we certainly are doing as best we can. So, in the broad scheme of things, it's true that there was cause and effect in the world. What we do matters. It's what we say matters. Blessings and curses. We bring blessings and curses into the world, for sure. Doesn't mean every individual thing that happens is a direct result of, I didn't do the right mitzvah, I didn't light candles on Friday night, so, I got a cold this week.
I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but we're talking about blessings and curses.
Yes.
And I read all the commentary, and nobody talks about the lovely lady donkey who has a lot to say. Why isn't anyone talking about the talking donkey in
yes.
the Torah portion?
Yes, well, we'll talk about that in one second, because I love that. Okay, so let's read it.
Okay.
We'll get there, and otherwise we'll never get there at all. Okay. So where was it? Oh, yes. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian, versed in divination, set out. So they come to Balaam. They give him Balak's message. He said, spend the night here, and I'll reply to you as Adonai may instruct me. So already it's an interesting.
It's weird.
It has the appearance of strangeness, because what do you mean? He's not an Israelite. He's a non-Israelite. And if he says, I got to check with God, the Jewish God, that is the God that but it's the Torah. That's why, number one. And number two, there are multiple lessons going on. And one of the lessons that's going on here is our God, Adonai Echad. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Listen, Israel, there's only one God. people may think there's all these different gods out there. They may build statues and idols and whatever. They may call God by all kinds of different names, which is why the Talmud says there are 70 names for God. But it's the same. There's one power. That's why the Torah begins the way the Torah begins. Why, the rabbis ask, does the Torah begin with Bereshit, Bara Elohim et Hashemayim et Haaretz? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Why doesn't it begin with Abraham? Why doesn't it begin with Lech Lecha? It's all about the Jews. Why doesn't it start with the Jews? And on purpose, obviously, it starts with Bereshit, because so that by the time we get to us, we know it's, and there's Adonai talking to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, all these people. We know, oh, that's the same power that created the whole universe. It's not a little personal, private God. This is a way of teaching and reminding us that our God isn't private. It's not the God of the Jews. It's not the God of the Israelites. It's the God of everybody. Happens to speak to Moses, happens to speak to whatever, and doesn't only speak to Moses. And doesn't only speak to the Jews. And if you're able to listen, no matter who you are, you can hear the voice of God in that sense. And here it is. You know, Bilam was smart enough to also, the way you may think about this is, what's Bilam being asked to do? He's being asked to curse who?
Israelites.
The Israelites.
Yes.
So it makes sense for him, if he's a diviner, yeah, if he's someone who like checks out with the divine, to check out with the God of the Jews to see, well, what's going on over here?
Is it okay?
This is the God who, according to Balak, was supporting the Israelites in defeating the Amorites and defeating all these other people, that they, Og of Bashan and people like that, earlier. So it makes sense for him to check with that particular deity to make, in his mind, even if it was a narrow deity. But the overall purpose, I believe, of the way the Torah was written this way is to show that God speaks to everybody.
Yeah.
If you listen. You don't have to, it's not a private God. So, God came to, and so God shows up, of course, because
the assumption is, well, Balaam is asleep.
Yeah, in a dream. The assumption here is in a dream. Because, in fact, that's part of the rabbinic way of understanding how God communicates, is that God speaks to everybody in a dream, prophets in a dream, except for Moses, who God speaks to face to face, like you and I would speak to each other, and which is what sets him apart. Otherwise, God shows up in your dreams, you know, which can be a scary thought when you think about your dreams. But, and to think that's
where
God. That's where God's showing up. God takes many forms.
And the first thing Balaam says is, oh, by the way, this wasn't my idea.
Right. Right. And God says, what do these envoys want of you? Balaam said, Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab, sent me this message. It didn't come from me. Here's the people that came out of Egypt, hides the earth, come now and curse them, but maybe I can engage them in battle and drive them off. But God said to Balaam, don't go. You can't curse them, they're blessed.
Yeah.
Now, part of this, the drama of this story is Balaam is for sale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole point. He's coming to buy him, to rent his words,
cursing.
His curses. Jews are big on curses. Well, Yiddish curses. Yiddish has great curses.
Yes.
I don't know Yiddish, but I know some of the Yiddish curses. My favorite Yiddish curse. Let's see. Anybody have a favorite Yiddish curse?
Me?
Yes.
You go poop in the ocean. That's what my go cock it off and yell. That's what my grandmother used to say when she got very angry at someone.
Anybody else have a? I love that one.
You have never heard that
famous
one?
Curse. Yeah, I like that one.
I don't know if I can do that one.
Grow like an onion with your head in the
Yes.
Oh, hey.
Yes, your head in the ground, your feet in the air.
When I was a kid, one of the curses, I don't think it was Yiddish, though, is your mother wears army shoes.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Not Yiddish.
But that was not Yiddish?
No.
Not
Yiddish. No, my favorite one is, may all of your teeth fall out and only one remain, and may it have a toothache in that one. That's a famous Yiddish curse. Okay, so, so Balaam Rose gets up, and he says to Balak's dignitaries, go home. God won't let me do it. So they left, they come to Balak, they say Balaam refused, so he sends them back again.
So again, he's passing the buck.
Again,
he takes the responsibility to God, and now he didn't say, I decided not to do
Sorry about how cold it is in here, yes.
Oh, I love it. It's colder.
Yeah, all of a sudden it's blasting cold. So Balak sent more numerous, more distinguished, richer, tries to buy him off, says, don't refuse to come, I'll reward you richly, I'll do anything you ask of me, just come and damn this people for me. So Balaam says, well, even if you gave me a house full of silver and gold, that's like how you bargain. Even if you gave me more and more and more, I wouldn't come unless you, which eventually he does. So I can't do whatever God, contrary to what God says. So, but you guys stay here overnight. Let me find out what else God says to me. I'll check again, just in case. That night, God came to Balaam and said, if these envoys have come to invite you, you can go with them. But whatever I command you, you shall still do.
I have a question. He yes. says, the Lord my God.
I know. He does.
Strength.
He literally says that.
Yeah.
Elohai. Adonai Elohai. Yes. I know. And I have often wrestled with that personally because the text is only the text. If you ignore the commentary, it looks like he's an Israelite.
Right.
You know. But everybody, every commentary, from the very beginning, clearly has said he's not because of his lineage. Because he's the son of Zippor, who was king of Moab. Now, I mean, he's the Amorite. So Balaam is allegedly an Amorite. So,
Balak is the son of
Zippor. Yeah, Balak is the son of Zippor.
Balaam is the son of Beor.
Yeah, who, according to the text, was not an Israelite. So, you know,
it would make more sense, the text, if he were an Israelite.
Yes.
It makes sense that he would be asking God.
It would. But then it takes away sort of the universality of the whole thing. So he rose in the morning, he saddled his ass, he departed with the Moabite dignitaries. God was incensed at his going. He said, you could go. Here's the power, another little lesson in free will. God says, you can go. It's like you say your kids. Okay, you can go, but, you know, it's your choice. You want to go to that party? It's your choice. But I prefer that you don't, but it's your choice. You know, if you're going to choose to go right instead of left, there's consequences. So he had permission. Otherwise, you know, if we don't have free will, after all, this is the whole fundamental issue about ethics in the first place. If you can't choose because God forces you to stay home, then, you know, you don't get any credit for doing the right thing ever because it's not your choice. The whole point of ethics is choice, is choosing and constantly being faced with choices and then figuring out what the right choice is, what the better choice is. So God gets upset, and so an angel of God took a position on his way to try to stop him. And this is the famous talking donkey story. So he was riding on a donkey, a she-ass, it says here, with his two servants alongside. And when the ass caught sight of the angel of God standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, the ass swerved from the road and went into the fields. So part of the story is just, of course, fanciful and crazy that there's an angel standing there with a sword and only the animal sees it. But that's part of the many, many layers of this is, what do you mean? This guy is allegedly someone special, a seer. Mm-hmm. He is a seer, but he couldn't see. Mm-hmm. The seer couldn't see. Because, right?
Well, anyone who has dogs and cats gets this.
Yes, right. Exactly. They'll let you know when there's an earthquake coming.
Yes.
So he swerved, and Balaam beat the ass to turn her back onto the road. The angel of God then stationed in the lane between the vineyards and the fence on either side. Then the angel showed up there. The ass, seeing the angel of God, pressed herself against the wall and squeezed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he beat her again. Once more, the angel moved forward and stationed himself on a spot so narrow that there was no room to swerve right or left. Finally, boxed him in. You know, first on the road, then he moved off the road, then he went there, then he moved over. He keeps trying to get away from him, and finally he's stuck. Now the ass saw the angel of God. She lay down because she couldn't go anywhere. So she just dropped. And Balaam was furious and beat the ass again. Three times he's already hitting this thing. Then God, because God can do anything, opened the ass's mouth and she speaks. And she says, what have I done to you? You've beaten me these three times. Balaam said, and of course Balaam, without missing a beat, continues the conversation, doesn't go, what the hell? Who are you? What do you mean you're talking to me? You never talked to me before. All of a sudden you're talking to me. Where have you been all my life? You know how much money I could make with you? No. Balaam says, you made a mockery of me. If I had a sword with me, I'd kill you. You know, kill the messenger. So many different wonderful story layers here. The ass said to Balaam, look, I am the ass that you have been riding all along until this day. Have I been in the habit of doing this to you? And he answered, no. Then God uncovered Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of God standing in the way, his drawn sword in his hand, whereupon he was smart enough to bow down to the ground. And the angel said to him, why have you beaten your ass these three times? It is I who came out as an adversary, for the errand is obnoxious to me. And when the ass saw me, she shied away because of me those three times. If she had not shied away from me, you are the one I should have killed while sparing her, instead of you killing her like you just said you wanted to do. Balaam said to the angel, I erred because I didn't know that you were standing in my way. If you still disapprove, I'll turn back. But the angel said, I love the contradictions of this story. The angel said to Balaam, go with these envoys. This is the same message all over again. But you must say nothing except what I tell you. So Balaam went. Okay, so before we go on, which we may never do, but in fact, so here's the story. Here's a whole Torah, right? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and we all know there's only one other time when any animals are speaking to humans, not even animals.
What?
In the Garden of Eden.
Oh, the snake.
The snake. The only other time in the whole Torah that any animal is speaking is the snake to Eve, going, you know, only time, right? And the Garden of Eden story is so clearly a non-normative story, and all the rest of it's like as if it's historical reality, even though it's not necessarily, but it's certainly written that way. Right? Written that way, with as if it's real people having real conversations, getting into fights, doing whatever, you know, slavery and freedom and fighting and wars, and all of a sudden, Mittendrennen, in the middle of everything, and the only time, there's this talking donkey. Okay. First of all, why do you think that's happening? What's going on? What's with the talking donkey? Why do you have an animal talking? Well, how do you feel about
because
it?
Because you never know. You never know where... I get back to Jacob, and that one of my favorite lines in the Torah, God was in this place, and I didn't
and
know
And I didn't
it.
Know, yes.
That sometimes you don't know where God is present or where your guidance is coming from. In this case, it's an animal. Who seems to be more right than the man.
Yes, smarter. Clearly.
The animal sees things. And if an animal can see more than us, Kol Mechomer,
yes. How much the more
how much,
so?
How much more so other people might be able to see more than us, and that we should be open and listening to them.
I look just like you, Carol, laughed. I said, if you have a dog or a cat, and you made a joke about, you know, about the earthquakes, that perhaps if we took a breath and pay more attention when the natural world is not doing what's expected, we'd have more insight and we'd make wiser choices.
Yeah, you know, the Talmud says, Ezu Chacham, who is wise, Halomed mi kol adam, the one who learns from everyone, from anyone. And the reality of life is, nobody has talking donkeys, on the one hand. On the other hand, we communicate in lots of different ways. There's a reason why it's increasingly popular to have service animals. You know?
Emotional service animals.
Yeah, emotional service animals. Right. You know, because they serve. Because they communicate. You know, the unconditional love and affection that you get from animals that you don't get from humans, the lack of judgment, no matter what you did, you come back and the next time they're still there going, hi, you know, here I am. You know, the nurturing, the all of this. Yeah, all of that, you know, which happens is real. It's not made up. It's not just in your head and is powerful. And, you know, where are all the places we can learn from? Clearly, one of the lessons of this is that you can, if you're open, just like it was Bilam who could hear God, our God, the Israelite God, that God appears in many ways. God appears in many places. I love, you know, Bert's reference to Yesh Adonai b'makom hazev anochi lo yadati. God was in this place and I didn't know. It's one of my favorite lines in the Torah too, because it's exactly right. You're supposed to wake up in the morning and go, where can I find God? You know, where do I find God? I find God in our relationships with people. I find God in the fact that my body, that I got, that I woke up, and that I can move, and that I can show, and I can pick something up, and all the different things. And, you know, the miracles of our everyday life, the everyday miracles of from birth to death and from dawn to dusk, you know, are so often invisible to us only because we aren't open to them. It's a matter of consciousness. That's what consciousness is all about, is being present in the moment. That's why you do the meditations and all the things you do, to in fact be grounded, you know, and not be so running and moving, and as I tend to do myself, that you miss the world. You know, you miss what's out there. You know, it's this stop and smell the flowers kind of comment, because they're there, and if you're so intent on, you know, the traffic, you don't notice that there's beauty out there in the world. Yeah.
And also, there are miracles in nature and there's miracles outside of nature. Mm-hmm. So when I take a look at this lovely talking she-donkey,
yes,
you've got a lot to say.
Yes.
You look at when the sun stood still.
Yeah.
And in the Talmud.
Sea parted.
The sea parted, or in the Talmud when the river ran backwards.
Yes, right.
And that you can take a look at when there's a miracle outside of nature, you need to halt and then pay extra special attention.
Now, what's interesting is, I'm glad you mentioned that, the rabbis, of traditional commentary rabbis, as opposed to contemporary rabbis, obviously had an issue here. It's a talking donkey. You know, it's like, how can a donkey be talking suddenly, you know? So they had to figure out, how they could explain this, because there aren't any other animals talking in the rest of the world, and because they believed and they taught that God set the world in motion and then the world follows the course of nature that God set up. You know, there's a whole powerful section in the Talmud where they say, if the world were absolutely just and you stole some seeds and planted them, they wouldn't grow. But the fact of the matter is, the seeds don't care whether you stole them or paid for them. If you plant them and you water them and you take care of them, they'll grow, because the world follows its natural way. They, in the same section, they get even more graphic. They say, if there was absolute justice in the world, then if a man forces himself on a woman, she wouldn't get pregnant, because it's clearly a violation. But it often happens that whether a man forces himself or not, she does get pregnant, just like the seed you plant, because the world follows it, the natural, the way of nature, because that's the way God is. And then they see this, in which the world is not following the way of nature, because donkeys don't talk. And so what they say is, there were 10 things that God created before God created the world that manifested themselves later in the world, that appeared to be out of nature, but they aren't really, because God created them in the very beginning, just like God created the heavens and the stars going around. And one of those things, I can't remember all 10 of them, but one of those things was this.
Uh-huh.
One of those things was
Teshuva.
Yes, God created certain things like repentance. But God created some, God created the sun standing still. Oh, when in the book of Joshua, the sun stands still. God created certain things that before, that were part of the pre-creation creation, so that they were actually part of nature.
And God, we know this. Because they'll be talking.
We only know this because they said so. because they had, it was the only way they could come up to trying to justify this.
Repentance was created before there were people.
Yes, repentance is a fundamental attribute of the universe, say the rabbis, the idea of repentance.
What
before people.
People,
it was sitting waiting for people.
Waiting.
Repentance was there waiting for people to come, because knowing God knew the nature of human beings is we screw up. We screw up. And therefore, it's necessary for us to be able to fix ourselves and to repent and to change. And if change weren't possible, then, and repentance weren't possible, then we would be condemned constantly by the things, that, the bad choices that we make. But in fact, we have Yom Kippur every year, because even though we constantly screw up and make bad choices, we have the opportunity. Repentance is there waiting for us to come back to the right fold. Yeah.
I'm a little lost in this section, but yeah. I keep seeing this, you must say nothing except what I tell you.
Right.
And that's resonating for me, because I grew up with a parent that was very, this is the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's your structure. You need to be that. So how is that? Is that a theme? I mean, I don't know.
Of doing what God says?
Well, it's this repetitive. You must say nothing, not do nothing, but even say nothing except what I tell you. That's more than doing, even.
Yes. Well, here, it's because this is the content of the story is curse. Come curse. I want you to curse. I want you to curse. And the bigger theme for me always is turning curses into blessings. Mm-hmm. That life is about the challenge of turning curses into blessings, because shitty things happen all the time, and things that we can't control. So, you know, that's what it's about. It's about looking back on your own life at the things that at the time were the curses of your life. Sometimes it was broken relationships. Sometimes it was professional, you know, challenges, losing your job, getting fired, making the bad choices. Sometimes it's parenting-related things with your parents, with your kids. Sometimes it's with friendships. Sometimes it's with, you know, I had a fire in my house, you know. But I had 10 months of being on vacation, you know, up in Santa Monica or whatever. And how you take the negatives and turn them into positives in your own life. That's the challenge. One of the fundamental challenges of our lives is to transform curses into blessings. So to me, that's sort of one of the meta lessons of the story, is that we have the opportunity to take situations which look like they're going to be curses and instead see them as, or transform them into blessings.
Turning poison into medicine.
Yes.
When life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
All of that.
Yeah, we go all the effort.
Exactly, but they're there for a reason. You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, one of my close friends just got diagnosed with leukemia, and she's in New York. She instantly, this last 2 weeks, she sort of instantly went into the hospital and is having chemotherapy. And, you know, they're pouring poison into her. That's what they do. You know, and the goal is to turn the poison into medicine, to, you know, turn the curse into the blessing of health and wholeness and healing, which is what we all want. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't, but it does also happen. You know, it doesn't always happen, but it happens. That, you know, I mean, I'm only here at KI because I didn't get a job that I applied for at another synagogue in Northridge that I desperately wanted, I thought. I certainly didn't desperately want it. I wanted this one, but I didn't know that because I wanted that one. You know, and then they turned me down, and I was devastated that how could they not hire me? I'm so good. You know, it's like, what do you mean they didn't hire me?
Your friend the cantor.
Yes, and my friend the cantor got the job instead. But her job. So,
Well, that message was
There it was, and I was upset a bit, you know, certainly, and then, you know, stumbled onto KI, and 30 years ago, I've been here 30 years now. And everybody has stories like that.
Can we go back?
Yeah.
You were talking about that idea from the Talmud that God kind of created the earth and then it ran.
Yes.
By itself.
Well, nature. God created the laws of nature. It's really what I meant to say.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay. Because
No. I didn't mean that God was like the watchmaker that set the watch going
right.
and then did
that
and then disappeared.
Yeah.
God created the laws of nature, and God doesn't counter the laws of nature. Is really the rabbinic notion. God, you can't pray to God to stop the river.
Have the rain go up.
You can't do that because the world follows its natural course. That was the point of the. That's why the rabbis have those stories in the Talmud with the seeds and the rape and whatever. Because it's a wrong prayer. There are right prayers and wrong prayers in Jewish tradition. There are things it's not appropriate to pray for, you know. And in fact, they call them silly prayers. There are silly prayers, praying that something that's already happened. Unhappens.
Not to be sick.
Yeah, it is a silly prayer, you know, because it happened already, you know.
You can pray for the strength to combat leukemia, but you can't pray to not have leukemia.
She's got it. She's got it already. So, you know what I mean? And so there are certain prayers that are called stupid prayers, actually, in the Talmud.
Another example I heard, you hear a fire engine.
That's the one.
You hear a fire engine, and you pray to God that it's...
Not my house.
It's burning.
Yeah, that's a stupid prayer, says the Talmud. Literally. That's one of my favorite ones. You know, if you hear...
Your house is either burning or not.
It's already burning. Something's burning. The way God works and doesn't work, says the Talmud, is God isn't going to go, oh, my God. Bird, I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was your. I didn't realize it was your house. The fire suddenly goes next door, you know, to my house because I wasn't praying because Bert was. Because that's not the way.
You could pray to have the strength to survive if it was your house.
Yes, you know. What you pray for is that the fire people get there quickly enough to put the fire out.
Right. That they're safe.
You know, and that nobody gets hurt.
What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to say a Shema every time you hear a siren.
Yeah, you pray that nobody gets hurt. You know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So, you know, which, I mean, clearly I had a fire, so I know. So, you know, it doesn't, you can't pray for the nature to reverse itself.
Like not to be pregnant.
Yeah. You know, you either are or you're not. You know, you can pray for lots of things, but praying for that when you hear the fire engine that it's not your house, you can do it, but it's a stupid prayer because it can't be answered. Yeah.
The Chabad rabbi said,
yes.
I'm friendly with the Cuban, especially Levy. He said that if you take a look, you can actually change or shift the decree of heaven if
by doing mitzvahs.
Well, yeah, that's good, but this is not quite. That if you take a look at the word Tzoras, and you see that it has O-R, which is also light. And if you are a grand detective and you take a look at something that looks like a curse, you find the Hebrew letters that look like a blessing, and you concentrate on the Hebrew letters that turn it from...
I like that. That's sweet.
...into life, you can actually shift the decree of heaven. What do you make of that?
I make of it if it makes you feel good.
Okay, and it's the alternative.
And gives you an alternative way of... like, look...
Well, that's assuming that heaven decrees.
Yes.
Which is a completely other...
Absolutely.
Certainly, I would think Reconstructionism would not accept that kind of an idea.
Okay, gotcha.
No. It's true, but, you know, it's also part of the how you take the Torah seriously without taking it literally, that kind of issue. That part of the fun... but more serious than that, of Hebrew. Of the Hebrew of the Torah, for sure, where they didn't have vowels and whatever, and so you can read the words lots of different ways, and there's no punctuation, so you can put commas where you want to put commas and change the meaning of phrases profoundly. Right, profoundly. And therefore blessings is like, or any word, like Yisrael, you know, Yisrael, Yud, Shin, Resh, all of you can pick it apart and you can say Yisrael means Yashar El, straight to God. That, you know, you can read it lots of different ways. So, and part of Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism is a huge part of it is doing exactly that, is taking phrases, taking words, and searching for alternate meanings within the and directions within the words, so that you to try to turn curses into blessings, to you know, and to the degree that it works because just like any meditation or any, because it changes you. What changes you is what matters. I don't think there's a heavenly decree up there that you're changing, that God's saying, I'm about to make that happen, but if you say the right words at the right time, I'll go over there, you know, and the fire will go to somebody else's house. You know, and the fire happened because, in my house, because we had a plug that was plugged into the wall, and it shorted, and it started an electrical fire in the wall. I could have prayed all I wanted, but it wasn't going to happen in Bert's house, because it happened in my house, because that's where the plug was, you know. So no more water features in our house. But in any event, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? So that's the reality. But what matters, none of that matters that much. You know, because when you think about what really matters in life, it's not none of the physical things of life are the things that matter. It's the spiritual things that matter. And the spiritual things you do have control over. The spiritual things, including your attitude about life, how you experience the traumas, along with the triumphs of life, is up to you. And the language of prayer in Jewish tradition, the rituals of prayer and life cycle events, the study of Torah are all means and opportunities for us to experience life in a certain way, to experience ourselves, our relationships, the world, the good and the bad, in ways that we can handle, that we can get a hold of, and that we can transcend when life becomes difficult, because life becomes difficult to different people at different times, physically, emotionally, family, relationships. You know, life isn't easy all the time. Life is, you know, look at the whole Genesis story is there for a reason. You will give birth in pain. Life is you got to go out and struggle and for your food, you have to go work, you have to till the soil. That's their version of, you know, you can't just sit back and hope you had the, you know, lucky sperm club and you ended up with rich parents that gave you everything you wanted. You know, sometimes that works, but for most people it doesn't. You know what I mean? Most people have to go out and make their way in with all of the complexity and messiness of life. And then in our tradition, this becomes a tool. The Torah is a tool to help us to thrive and to handle life in the best possible way. Ultimately, time flies when I'm having fun. Ultimately, you know, the blessing of Bilam is Ma Tovu Ohalecha Yaakov Mishkanotecha Yisrael. How beautiful are your tents, O Jacob. Your dwelling places of Israel, which, and it's sort of the kicker of the whole thing, the irony of the whole thing is that these words, which are the first time that our people as a whole are blessed by other than by God, mm-hmm. is a blessing we receive from this non-Jewish, non-Israelite prophet that we then take and took and use every single day in Jewish tradition is the very beginning of religious services. Every synagogue service traditionally begins with those very words that you walk in and say, Ma Tovu Alecha Yisrael, Mishkanotecha Yisrael, that our tents of meeting become our sanctuaries and our synagogues, and that we've took those words and used them as a kind of a rallying cry for how we're supposed to have communities of meaning and of holiness. And traditional Jews used to use that opening phrase in order to count the minyan, to see, you know, a traditional minyan, if you're a traditional Jew, was 10 men.
I remember that part.
10 men. And one of the ways that Orthodox Jews used to count was they would count Ma Tovu Oha Lecha Yaakov. That's how they would count to see if there are 10 people. Ma Tovu Oha Lecha Yaakov. Got it. And if they could complete the phrase, how good are your tents of Jacob, they could have services.
Oh my goodness.
And on that, I'm ending.